like they used to be.
Scratched.
Yes, welcome to SVR. It's John Barrett here. And this show is going to be a bit different. It's going to be an interview I did years ago. But the gentleman is still well and truly alive. In fact, he was playing down in Bridgewater about 3 or 4 months ago. I went to see him play, and he is very good. There's no doubt about it. He's a proper person. He can really keep playing all these years. He was celebrating his 80th birthday, just trying to remember this. And, who is it? It's Albert Lee. Now, a lot of you may not know Albert Lee, but if you're a bit like me, a bit of a geek, probably that's the right word. Yes, he's well known. So what I'm going to do today, I'm going to play an interview I did with him about 40 years ago. And I'll be playing a bit of music after that. And just to make a show up for the hour. I hope you enjoy it all. It's something a little bit different. And I've got to press this button and it should start. So it's Albert Lee. As I say, I got the interview in Bristol, of all places, and in a pub. Yes, indeed. Right, and let's just press this button and get started. That's what we're trying to do, yeah.
SVR plays the oldies, just like they used to be.
Scratched.
Yes, let's get that out of the way.
Go ahead.
Did you really first of all start with Chris Farlow and the Thunderbirds? Was that when you first started professionally?
Oh no, 4 years before that. I did my first tour in 1960.
What kind of tour was that?
It was one of the, you remember Larry Palms?
Indeed.
Well, it was for the Larry Palms stable.
What were you called?
Well, I forget. No, I wasn't a singer.
No.
I was one of the teenage backing musicians, you know, and we backed Dickie Pride and Vince Eager, Sally Kelly, and a bunch of people, you know. But I was just 16 then. That was my first tour.
Is that, had you learnt guitar for a long time before that?
I'd been playing 18 months or 2 years, I guess. You know, I was about 13 or 14 when I first started playing.
But eventually it was Chris Farlow, obviously, and the Thunderbirds, where we all know, you're known from.
Yeah, that was the first name band that I played with, you know, and that was a lot of fun. I was with him for 4 years, and we got to play a lot of good places, you know.
But that sort of music was really rhythm and blues, what we called it in those days, wasn't it? So
it was, yeah, and soul, yeah.
So
yeah.
Was it? How on earth did you get with the Crickets? I mean, that was amazing transformation from rhythm and blues to the Cricket sort of music, wasn't it?
Well, I suppose so, but I tend to be able to slot in with a lot of different styles. You know, the way I play, I don't have to alter it that much to play with different styles of music. But I grew up on Buddy Holly, as a lot of us did at my age, you know, and I always wanted to play that kind of music, and I eventually met up with the guys in like 1970, 71 in Los Angeles, and I've been good friends with them ever since, and I ended up doing a couple of tours with them and a couple of albums, you know. So I really enjoyed that.
I met Sonny Curtis about 6 or 7 years ago, and he's always remember fondly when you played with him as well. He's a hell of a nice bloke.
Oh, he is very nice, yeah. Oh, it's nice of him to say that. Yeah.
Did really the Cricket sort of music, sort of, how did you transform into the country music? Because, I mean, seeing you tonight, although you have a wide range of the music, it's still country you're known for, isn't it? So what made you stick to that sort of blend of music, really?
Well, I always liked country, and I always felt that I played it better than I play other kinds of music, than, you know, blues, for instance. You know, I like blues, but I don't really have a grip on it like someone like Eric Clapton does, you know. But I felt I can do this much better, you know, and there are a lot of people who can't do it, you know, so I thought I should maybe stick with the stuff that I really like, you know. Probably that's why I do it better, is because I like it so much, you know. So I always liked country music right from the early 60s, and even when I was with Farlow, I used to go out and buy Buck Owens records, you know.
I was wondering what kind of country music you like, though, you know.
Yeah, well, all kinds, really, you know. But, you know, I have to say that the old standbys are really the people I like, you know, like George Jones and Buck Owens, you know, are the people I grew up on, you know.
With Hairs, Hands and Feet, was it a disappointment, really? It never really quite made it? Because that was sort of a good group, wasn't it?
It was, and it was a disappointment. There were a few things in the band that I didn't like, you know. There are a lot of things I did like. You know, I learned a lot in that band. You know, I was forced to play piano and forced to write songs. So I really enjoyed that side of it. But there were some frustrating things in it for me too, and I left, along with Chas Hodges, he left too. And I suppose if we persevered, things may have gone better, you know, but as it happens, we split up, yeah.
And was your next big step with the Emmylou Harris?
The Crickets were after Heads, Hands and Feet, yeah, because I'd met up with them in Los Angeles while I was playing with Heads, Hands and Feet. And then through the Crickets, I got to spend a lot of time in L.A. And I'd been in and out of town, but not really lived there for any length of time. And so I was around there for a month or so at a time and got to meet a lot of people in L.A. And obviously playing with Glenn D. Hardin, that was an introduction to the Emmylou Harris Band, of course, you know, because he was a Cricket. And in the meantime, I played with Joe Cocker for a year or so out there, you know, touring around the world. And then just fell into the gig with Emmylou, and I realized then that I was living in America, you know, because American band that was working so much, you know, that's where I was, you know.
That's really when you decided to stay in America, yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
Was one of your younger guitar heroes James Burton by any chance?
Oh, yeah, and still is. I mean, he's still one of my favorite players, yeah, of course, yeah.
Because you took over from him, I suppose,
yeah.
In the band.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was... He was trying to work two gigs at the same time. He's trying to do Elvis Presley and Emmylou, you know. So they gave him an ultimatum, you know, asked him what he wanted to do. So he chose Elvis, and so I got the gig, you know.
A bit more money on Elvis, I suppose.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he was doing very well with Elvis.
And when did Eric Clapton come in on the scene at that time, anyway? Because I mean, you were with Emmylou for a few years, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, actually, I was only with Emmy for 18 months or 2 years, but. On the road, but looking at the albums, it would give you the
many years.
Yeah, because there was a lot of stuff in the can, and also I'd go back and do sessions, even though I wasn't in the road band anymore, you know. So I've been on a lot of her albums ever since, you know, even though I was only actually on the road with her for about 2 years. But I left her to work on my first solo album, and then when it was done, I had the choice of going out on my own and doing little clubs or joining another band or maybe going back with Emmy. And I just happened to do a session with Eric Clapton. It was a Mark Benno album. We did it in London. And Eric hit on the idea of having me in his band, you know. So I did that for 5 years. And that was...
Was it as long as that?
It was 5 years, yeah. It was 79 to 83, 84.
You didn't really play apart from that in that time, because you did a lot of session work in that time, sure.
Yeah, I was doing sessions throughout that time, and I was doing odd gigs with like Joan Armatrading and a few other people, you know.
I thought I saw you beginning of the 80s with Don Everly on the Marty Robbins tour.
That's right, yeah. Well, throughout the 70s I was working with Don. You know, I met up with him in the early 70s, just after he split up with Phil. And I did quite a bit of work with him, you know. We played clubs out in L.A. and Buddy Emmons used to play there too, and John Hartford and Doug Dillard, you know. We had a great band. We used to jam every Tuesday night, you know, at this little club.
This is really the heart of your music, isn't it? The sort of the small clubs and everything.
Well, that's where I have the most fun, yeah. I think most musicians do, yeah.
And how much influence did you have on the Everlys getting back together? Are you going to take any credit?
No, I don't think so. It came as a big surprise to me, because I got a call. I forget who called me first, if it was Don or if it was Terry Slater. But they'd had a few things that were keeping them from talking throughout the years, you know, and little business things that they got it all ironed out, and then they started to talk, and then someone had suggested, well, they'd been suggested throughout the years anyway, but they'd been offered gigs, you know, a lot of money to get back together, and they weren't interested at all, you know. But they finally sat down and started to talk about it, you know, and then they got together in Nashville for a week or so with a little rhythm section, and they ran through some of the old songs to see what it sounded like, and of course it sounded great, you know. And then I got a call, and I heard that they, you know, they were thinking of doing it, and would I go to London to do, to
the whole thing,
yeah. And we did it, you know. It took about 2 weeks to, you know, rehearse and do it all, and it was great, you know. And I thought, well, that's great. I'm glad I did that. After all these years, I finally got to play with the Everly Brothers.
Yeah.
And I never thought any more of it. You know, I knew it was good they were going to do a video of it and all that, you know. But a few months later, they said, well, you know, we're thinking about going out on the road. You know, do you want to do the road gig, you know? And it was just at that time that I got fired from Eric Clapton's band. So it just worked out great, you know.
Yeah. And you've been doing... Are you still with the Everlys now? Because they've just finished recently, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm still with them, yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you three separate little ones, very quick ones, sure, probably for you? About 1969, I've got an LP by Carol Ann Pegg.
Oh yeah, that's me.
You played a lot on that LP.
Yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about it?
Oh yeah, we had a great time. It was done at Rockfield, yes, up in Monmouth, you know, and that's a wonderful place. I had a great time.
I mean, yeah, in those days, you weren't really that well known as such, were you? I mean, but you played an awful lot of lead on it, didn't you? It was great.
Yeah, well, I was known amongst certain musicians, you know, but I wasn't, I mean, I'm not exactly a household name now, but I was, you know.
Whatever happened to her?
No idea. No idea whatever happened to her.
The second one is a little bit self-defeating now, because you played Dave Edmunds, the one that he featured on his LP, as your first track tonight, didn't you?
Yeah.
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 Do you try to get that out of the way?
Oh, no, I enjoy doing that. It's a good punchy song to start off with, you know. In fact, I was instrumental in him recording that in the first place, because it was written by Hank DeVito, who used to play with Emmylou, and I played on the original demo. And Hank said, do you know Dave Edmunds? You know, I said, well, yeah, you know, I said, I've known him over the years. I don't know him very well. He said, well, you know, if you see him in London, could you give him this tape? You know, so I gave him the tape with the hope that Dave would record it. And, of course, he loved it, and he did record it. And then he called me up a few weeks later and said, well, he said, how would you like? He said, we like what you did on the demo. Would you like to play on the record? And I said, well, sure, you know. So I did that. And then when it came time for me to do my record, I thought, well, you know, I'll do a version of it too, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a little different, you know, but I like it. You know.
I've got two ones. One of my big heroes is John Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
You've never actually played with him, I don't think, have you? Though you live quite close to him.
Yeah, I see him every now and again. He lives in Malibu, and I've seen him play a few times, yeah.
Do you like his style at all?
Very much so, yeah. I always liked his music, yeah. Yeah, and he's still at it, I'm glad to say, you know.
Just about, so, yes, now, isn't it? Yeah. And the final one, if you don't mind, Albert, is, must be the beginning of the 80s, John Fogerty came back, he did Centrefield, which is a superb LP,
yeah.
And did he do a video? Because in this country, you just can't find anything about this, but he did a video, and there you were playing on this video.
Yeah, we did a video, and he put a band together just for the video.
Did this video become sort of available in America?
I've never seen it for sale, but it was shown on MTV in a few places, you know. And it was very interesting, you know. It was just like, welcome back.
That's right. I mean, he's a tremendous character, I would have thought, to know, anyway.
Yeah, it was fun. And at that point, we'd hoped that he was going to use that band to go on the road. And finally, when he did go out on the road, he got a bunch of young guys, you know. Someone had a word in his ear and said, well, no, you should be going out there with these young guys, not all these old guys, you know. And that's what he did. But, I mean, nobody's heard much from him lately, you know.
He did Eye of the Zombie, and that was the end, wasn't it?
No.
Which wasn't anything like sort of Centrefield at all. No,
I haven't heard much from him lately, no.
And what are you doing, Albert? You brought out Gagged But Not Bound.
Yeah.
Anything else in the pipeline?
No, I haven't really had time this year. I've been working the whole year with the Everlys and just odd things in between, you know. But I hope to have a couple of months early in the year, you know, next year, to get in the studio and do another album.
Well, thanks for spending the time with us, and best of luck in the future, Albert.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate your interest. Thank you.
Just find a couple of LPs now for you.
Yes, he's signed a couple of LPs for me as well. And that's Albert Lee. Now, what I'm going to do for the last bit of the show, I'm going to play some Albert Lee tracks that he did, and also ones that he was mentioning on the interview, because these are all going to be on vinyl. so I've had to record it all onto vinyl. But I think you will enjoy them all. And we'll start with the Country Boy one, which is the one I saw when he was 80. He's still playing it, and he starts with it. And he played it well. I'll give him credit, because he's quite an old man now. I'm nearly as old as him. So anyway, let's play some Albert Lee, Country Boy. Here it comes.
Like a city slicker shining up through my shoes. Underneath I'm just a cotton picker picking out a mess of blue. Show me where I start. Find a horse and cart. I'm just a country boy. Country boy at
Yes, indeed, Country Boy by Mr. Albert Lee. That's his own version of it. And let's say he mentioned it, that Dave Edmunds did it before him. But that's Country Boy by Mr. Albert Lee. That is his version. And now the lady we're going to have next is Emmylou Harris, because again, we talked a bit about her. And again, I'm just playing Albert Lee tracks. So here he comes again, left hand. Pancho and Lefty, it's called. It's a good track. It really is a good track. Here it comes, any second now.
Living on the road, my friend, is gonna keep you free and clean. Now you wear your skin like iron, your breath's as hard as kerosene. weren't your mama's only boy, but her favorite one, it seemed. She began to cry when you said goodbye and sank into your dreams. Poncho was a bandit boss. His horse was fast as polished steel. He wore his gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Poncho met his match, you know, in the deserts down in Mexico, and nobody heard his dying words. Oh, that's the way it goes. All of that are all they say, but could have had him any day. Only let him slip away out of kindness, I suppose. Lefty can sing the blues all night long like he used to. The dusty Poncho bit down south, ended up in Lefty's mouth. Day they laid poor Poncho low, Lefty split for Ohio, and where he got the bread to go. Ain't nobody know. All of that or all they say, could have had him any day. We only let him slip away out of kindness, I cheap hotel. The desert's quiet and Cleveland's cold, and so the story ends were told. Poncho, need your prayers, is true, but save a few for Lefty too. He only did what he had to do, and now he's growing.
Yes, that's Emmylou Harris there again, with Albert Lee playing a load of guitar all over it. And he's played, we mentioned it when we did the interview with him, he did quite a few different people. And the other one we mentioned quite heavily was, the crickets, but I haven't really got a crickets LP, which I know Albert Lee played on. I've got a crickets LP, but yeah, I don't think he played on any of it. So I'm going to go out on to the Everly Brothers. And I saw the Everly Brothers, and Albert Lee was in the band, and I saw them down in Cornwall. And I was so disappointed with them, because all they did was just play all their old stuff. And I'm not going to do that. They passed away now, so there's no real point. I'm not going to upset anybody. But I shall now play the Paul McCartney track, which was the big hit at the time. And they did play this one, I will admit that, but this is the only track they played. All the rest was all their old stuff. And it was good to hear their old stuff, I know, but you'd think they would have promoted it a bit better than just On the Wings of a Nightingale. Anyway, this is Paul McCartney. He wrote it, and the Everly Brothers and Albert Lee, he played on it. Here it comes, any second now.
When I love, I get a feeling like I'm traveling through the sky. On the wings of a nightingale. As I ride, my head is reeling, but I don't even wonder why. On the wings of a nightingale, I'll fly. High above land and sea, I'll be thinking of you and me. Couldn't ask for a better place to be. Oh, I can feel something happening. Oh, I can feel something happening. Oh, I can feel something happening to me. So hold my hand. I've got a feeling that the journey has just begun.
The Everly Brothers there, and ably backed by Albert Lee, and he had Pete Winfield, and he was one of the other band people who was in the band at the Albert Hall, and they were very good that night, the backing band were. The Everly Brothers, I was a bit disappointed, I got to be honest, and that's all I will say about that. I will move on now to another track, and this is what he mentioned, Eric Clapton. And this is the one track which I know, because I read the LP up just now, that Albert Lee plays and he sings as well on it. So let's hear some of that and see what you think of it. It's a Live in Japan one.
For you, girl. Her hand
on the Clapton LP there. That was getting more or less all of Albert Lee playing on that one. I don't even think Clapton played. I think Clapton used to go in the back and have a little drink whilst Albert Lee sort of did his little bit. That's the story Albert Lee tells us anyway. And we're going to finish now with one side of an LP by a lady. And you might think, well, how can I explain this better? He played on this one, and I talked about it to him on the interview, and he made all the guitar sounds on it. But the lady was a violin player. She sings as well. So it's a bit obscure because it's... but it's, yeah, it's good. It really is very good. His guitar bits are very good. She's got definitely a style of playing violin. But I've got the whole LP, and I'm playing one side of it now just to sort of get through the records. So here we go, Carol Ann Pegg, and I forgot what the LP is even called. Now I've put it back. Never mind. Let's play this, and I'm pretty certain you're going to enjoy it. Anyway, here we go. And I don't even know what the first track is or anything. Anyway, here it starts.
Yeah.
Yes, you're hearing some Carol Ann Pegg here now to finish the show off with, but they've got Albert Lee on every track, and there's not much more I can tell you, but just listening, here it starts again. This is vinyl for you, you see, so you get the gaps in between. Carol Ann Pegg used to be in a band called Mr. Fox, I'd better mention that, and then she brought this solo LP out, and then she more or less never did anything else. Anyway, this is a violin track, really.
Thank you.
Winnipeg you're listening to, with Albert Lee playing his guitar on it. A couple more tracks and that'll be the end of the show coming up. Oh, here it starts again. Good, here she comes. She's good, really. I bought the LP years ago.
Now's the time for sadness and sorrow. File away my smile on the shelf till tomorrow. Tonight on my brow a sapphire I'll bind to soothe my aching soul and ease my troubled mind. First night alone I thought myself stoned, trod the tall tunnel of hatred and fear. Burning eyes sought me, boshed figures fought me, smiling through the tears, 'cause love disappeared. Now's the time for sadness and sorrow. File away my smile on the shelf till tomorrow. Tonight on my brow a sapphire I will bind to soothe my aching soul and ease my troubled mind. Night it was black and cold, my eyes they were sore. Tomcat was howling outside my door, while inside three ladies passed me by on skis, caps floating in the wind, showing me their knees. Now's the time for sadness and sorrow. File away my smile on the shelf till tomorrow. Tonight on my brow a sapphire I will bind to soothe my aching soul and ease my troubled mind. Nowhere to run to, nowhere to go. Have to play the game, wait and watch the show. When the set is empty and the players have gone home, maybe I'll find that I am not alone. Now is the time for sadness and sorrow. File away my smile on the shelf till tomorrow. Tonight on my brow a sapphire I'll bind to soothe my aching soul and ease my troubled mind.
Yes, there will be one more track and then that'll be the end of the show. This is quite a long track. She's playing fiddle all the time, but Albert Lee definitely indulges here. I hope you enjoyed the show and see you again next week.
Said the lady to the dark-eyed stranger, hold my hand and walk a while, for I fear to pass through the ragged wood that lies between me and the stile. No, said the man, that may not be. This time you must walk alone, for in the wild wood lives my master, and he will turn me into stone. Oh, And I'll tell you the reason why. There is a child in my two sides, between you, dear Billy, and I. Oh, he's taken off his good broadsword, and he's laid her across his knee, and he's cut it off.
On the day. dawn did break. The wind sang softly in her ear. A fortune's star will shine before you. Courage now has conquered fear.
That's the end of the show. I'm going to say thank you very much. I've really got to fly now because it's almost the bewitching hour. And you're going to have that. No, you're not going to even have that. I was going to say you're going to have the bit about the all about radio, Sid Valley Radio. It's all about radio shambles in my mind again now. Sid Valley Radio, proper community radio. Keep listening all the time. It's well worth it. And I shall now, hopefully, get this to work backwards for me. Yep, I should go back. I just press this button. Oh no, time's up anyway. So thanks once again. Goodbye. Dear me, John Borrett saying goodbye.